Hello, welcome back to Master of Disaster. I'm your host, Mark Bukowski. This is podcast number 4. I've been telling you guys every time I do these that I'm going to do them once a week. So I'm no longer going to say that because I'm not doing them once a week. Time just gets in the way. You know, I have too much going on. I wish I could take more time to do these because I really enjoy them. There is much of a therapy lesson for me as they may be for someone else. And I like doing them. With that being said, I was doing the first 3 from my parents' basement because they're in Florida. I built a little sound room down there. It worked out great, but I had to move out of there. And now I'm in my basement. So you might hear some things in the background like water running down through a drain because I am in the basement. And you might hear feet stomping up the stairs because my kids don't know how to walk lightly. And if you do, so be it. That's just the way it's going to be. Today, Master of Disaster. I want to talk about things or a thing that I just broadly touched on. I touched a little bit on everything in small details on my life from my childhood to my present. And presently, I am working on myself to become a better person, and it's something that we never can stop doing. We can always be better. But today, I want to talk about one thing and try to stick to that topic. I may get off topic because that's just how I operate. I also operate these podcasts with no notes. I just kind of blurt out what comes in my head, and sometimes I pause because I get stuck in the moment on what I was trying to say. But today I want to talk about addiction. I am a recovered drug addict, and there's a lot of people out there that are stuck, that are scared, that don't know what to do or where to turn, and I just want to try to give hope to at least one person. I don't care if it touches one. I would love to touch a million. And I'm also hoping a really close friend of mine, one of my closest friends, listens to this podcast. I don't think he will. His wife may, and if she is, try to ask him to listen to it, and hopefully he'll learn a little bit from it. So the first thing about addiction is you have to be hold yourself accountable. If you really want to get out of that process of addiction and on the road to recovery, you have to give in to your drug. You have to let yourself know that you are completely powerless to your drug. You have no control over your drug, and you are willing to do whatever it takes to keep that drug controlling your life. Whether it be stealing, hurting, whatever it is, you're going to do it to make sure you get your drug because that is the most important thing to you. You love other things in life, but they will always be put behind you. They will always come second to you because your drug is your number one priority. So, in order for me to do this podcast, I think it's pretty important that I be completely honest with you and with myself about everything that I've done and where I've been and how I got through it. And I can sit here right now and tell you, looking back, it's embarrassing. I did terrible things. I've hurt a lot of people. But I can also tell you, looking back, that my addiction was the worst thing I've ever been through, but the best thing I've ever been through. I couldn't sit in this chair today and talk to you or admit to myself that I had a problem. I couldn't be who I am today. And I wouldn't be in a position to want to work on who I am today. And working on who I am is something I want to do every day for the rest of my life. There's always room for improvement. I don't care if you are the most successful person in the world or the least successful person in the world. Every day there's just room for improvement, and we all know it. So this also goes for the people that aren't addicted, family members. Addiction doesn't just affect the addicted. It affects anyone and everyone around the person that is addicted. And most people that are not the addicted person have a very hard time understanding what is going through the mind of the addicted and why they are doing it. And a prime example would be me. I found great relief in the first drug I ever took, and I wanted that feeling for the rest of my life. Where someone like my wife takes the same drug, and the feeling she gets is dizziness, cloudiness, and sickness. So there's a lot to be learned on both sides, the addicted and the non-addicted. And first of all, the word addiction, you know, it's an ugly name. It comes to a lot of people as someone that is dirty, has nothing, a loser, lives in a shithole, and just doesn't have life figured out. You know, that's how a lot of people think of people that say they're a drug addict. But I'm telling you right now, addiction does not discriminate. The outpatient program that ultimately got me to where I am today had school teachers, lawyers, doctors, golf pros, people with very little, and people with a lot. But we all had one thing in common. We had something missing in our life, and we filled that gap with our drug of choice. So whether it was, you know, the smallest, easiest little drug, whether it was gambling or whether it was the worst drug known to man, an addiction is an addiction, and they all fall under the same category. And getting help is not possible until you are willing to give in and let yourself know, or tell yourself, or be honest with yourself, that you are powerless. You have no control. Your drug is controlling your life. And if you can't look at that and be honest about that saying, then you can go to rehab, you can go to counseling, you can do as many things as you want, and you will relapse 100%. And unfortunately, with addiction, with drugs, you don't get that many chances, because ultimately the drug will win. If you do not get yourself clean, there is a 100% chance the drug will win. It may not kill you, but it will ruin you. And more than likely, it will kill you eventually. So let me share some of my stories, and, you know, maybe some people can relate with some of my stories. I have had 3 spinal fusions in my lifetime, and a wrist that was rebuilt from a four-wheeler accident. And I'm sure you're all thinking, oh, spinal fusions, back surgeries, that's where I hear all these drug addictions start from. But that's not where my story started from. And this is my story, and in order for me to tell it to you, and for me, for helping myself, I have to tell it to you honestly. And I'm probably going to be so honest that a lot of people are going to be surprised at what they hear. And I think this is going to help me as well as help others. So a lot of people think that, you know, I started out with drugs because of my back. And that's far from the truth. I never took a drug for my back. I had a doctor that I went to for my wrist, and I told him I had wrist pain. And up until that point, I had lived a life of lies. In the public eye, I was cocky, arrogant, not very nice, but I was also very nice, would do anything for anybody, and considerate. So what do I mean by that? I had two sides to me. There was a side of me that felt good helping people. There was a side of me that got a high off from helping people. And then there was a side of me that hurt people. And I learned a very powerful statement from my brother-in-law. And if you listen to it, repeat it and really listen to it. It's so simple, but so powerful. And the saying is, hurt people hurt people. Now, think of that. Hurt people hurt people. So, I grew up hiding my hurt, but I constantly hurt people. And sometimes physically, you know, I would cause fights, or I would abuse people verbally, and that hurts probably more than actually hitting someone physically. I mean, I was the kind of person that if you are going to say or do anything to me, I promise you, no matter what it takes, I am going to come back and make it 10 times worse on you. So there's nothing better or more true than the saying, hurt people hurt people. So my addiction started when I had a doctor give me a simple drug for a pain that I had in my wrist. And the drug was hydrocortone. Hydrocortone, you know, it's just your baseline starting drug. But prior to that, I had never really had a opiate prescribed to me. I took the opiate, and I could not believe what I felt. What I felt was what I was dreaming of my entire life. I felt happy. I felt warm. I felt loved. I felt like the world was easier, brighter. Everything seemed simpler. I worked much harder. I concentrated. I had all the answers, and I could not believe it was all in the form of one pill. So my wrist had healed, and I was living with it perfectly. But I went back at the end of the 30 days, and I told my doctor that my pain was worse than ever. I couldn't use my wrist. I don't know what to do. The medicine you're giving me, just, it worked, but it's not working anymore. And we're going back probably 20 years. So things were not very strict with opiates. A lot of doctors were like Pez dispensers. You just went in, you asked them, they opened up their little script, and they wrote you whatever you needed. So this doctor said, well, there are stronger drugs. You may just be getting used to the hydrocortone. So let's switch it from a drug called hydrocortone to a drug called oxycodone or Percocet. So I got the Percocet, and same thing, got my first script, and the Percocet was amazing. Everything was great. I felt nice and warm, fuzzy. Things were easy. I was nice. There was no problems. Life was great for that day. And that's where addiction starts. It's the first pill. Every time you get something stronger, you go the rest of your life as an addict looking for the feeling you got from the first pill you took. So 30 days go by and same thing. How you feeling? You know, I felt good for a few days, but I still can't use this wrist. Okay. Well, that's a 7.5 milligram. They do make 10 milligrams. Let's bump you up to that. So up to 10 milligrams I went. So 10 milligram pills it was. And they don't last very long. So let's give you a OxyContin extended release and we'll use the Percocet for breakthrough pain. Perfect. Took the OxyContin. Didn't have much effect on me. Still love the Percocet. So I was swallowing those like candy, and I would call back and say, you know, I'm taking 3 a day for the breakthrough pain, so can you write me for more? Sure, let's do 5 a day. You know, that's 150 pills a month, no problem. So that went on for 4 months. I had a friend that owned a drugstore in town, and he battled some addiction, but he gave in, and he admitted it, that he was powerless, and he got help. And that was where I filled my drugs. I went in there with a script, and it was a script for 10 milligram Percocets, and it was probably my 20th time going in there. And he had just gotten done with a 30-day stint in an inpatient facility. And he filled my script for me, and he said, Mark, come over here. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I walked to the end of the counter. He set those down in front of me. And he said, take this fucking script and don't ever come in my fucking drugstore again. I'll never fill it. I should have told you this a long time ago, but what I couldn't recognize it myself. But you have a serious problem. I'm calling your doctor. Get yourself some help. I didn't know what to do except say, fuck you. You're an asshole. You don't know me. And I left. And I said, fuck him. I'll take my drug somewhere else. So it took about 5 minutes of me just processing what he told me. And after 5 minutes, I knew he was right. I knew that I had been taking OxyContin and Percocet for almost a year. I didn't have any desire to stop. I didn't want to go back to feeling miserable. I loved the way it felt. But I also knew it was a problem. And I was scared that he was going to call my doctor. And if he called my doctor, what was I going to do? So before he could call my doctor, I called my doctor privately. And I said, hey, doc, I'm taking this medication, and what do I need to do to get off it? I'm scared. And I was too late. He said, well, I just talked to John Doe, and he told me that he thinks that you have a problem. And my only recommendation to you is to go to Tully Hill. Man, did that scare me. Holy shit. Tully Hill, that's an inpatient for drug addicts. There's no way I'm a drug addict. So, I didn't know what to do. So, my wife, at this point, she knew that I was taking too many drugs. And I went to her and I said, I think I need to go to Tully Hill. And she was fine with it. But before I did that, I had to go tell my parents. Because I did hide it from everybody. So I went to my parents. I sat at the table. I told them I had a drug problem. And they couldn't even comprehend it, much less believe it. So I told them I was going to Tully Hill, but they didn't take insurance. And if anybody knows anything about inpatient rehab, it is outrageously expensive, and insurance companies will not cover an inpatient person that is there for a drug addiction. So if I can give you a little advice and you want to get help, walk in there and tell them you are an alcoholic. Because if you go in as an alcoholic, they will take you. They cannot not accept you. And your insurance will cover it. You can die from severe, sudden alcohol withdrawal. And as bad as you want to die, and as bad as you feel like you are dying from opiate withdrawal, you can't die from it. You can sit in a room and feel like death for 2 weeks, but you will not die from it. They don't consider it a life or death situation, so it's not covered by insurance. I went to rehab. I went to Tully Hill. I checked myself in. I got in there, and I was scared as shit. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to expect. I just saw a lot of people, and I was there for the wrong reason. I was there because I knew my wife wanted me to get better. So I walked in, I gave them my drugs, they disposed of them, took me to my room, introduced me to my roommate, who was an elderly man there for alcoholism, super nice people, great facility. But I ran into a problem. I had a problem with anxiety and panic attacks. And I had a major panic attack set in. And that panic attack told me to get out of there. So I no more than unpacked my bag. I packed it back up. I went to the desk and said that I was leaving. And because I was there, not by court order, they could not keep me. So they couldn't keep me. Sorry, I just pushed pause. I had to do something real quick, and I think I left off with being at Tully Hill. So they tried everything they could to keep me there, but they knew they couldn't keep me at will. So I called my wife and said, come pick me up. And she was not happy. She actually said she wasn't going to pick me up. So I started walking down whatever road it is toward Hamilton. And the worst withdrawals on the hottest day of the year you could imagine. And she finally picked me up and we went home. And I let everybody down. I just wasn't ready. And that was my first failure. And a lot of people fail. But that's okay. We all fail in life. And you can't expect somebody to get perfect on the first try. I'm not perfect. I'm far from it. If somebody relapses, that's okay. You have to give them credit for trying and starting out and knowing that they are leaning in the right direction. Because after my first experience with opiates, you know, if you told me within a couple of weeks that I had to get off them, I would have told you to go to hell. I feel too good. There's no way I'm getting off them. But eventually we all get past that and we get sick of the chase. We live day to day just looking for the drugs. So I came out of Tully Hill and a week went by. Of course, I've already been back on drugs. And I thought I found the answer. All right. Look at this place in New Jersey. It's a one-day thing. You go down, you get tested, and they send you home with a care package. They send you home with 2 weeks of Suboxone, 2 weeks of Adderall, and 2 weeks of a benzodiazepine, which people that know drugs know what benzodiazepines and Adderall are. It's basically cocaine, sleeping medicine, and heroin without the high. So I went on the Suboxone and I withdrew myself over a 2 week period. I definitely used all the benzos. I never got a high from benzos. I actually still have a prescription for benzos every month for a little bit of anxiety, but mostly a sleeping disorder. But there's no benefit to the benzos. I know it's a highly abused drug. I just don't. For some reason, my body does not process it right. It does help me sleep, but there's no euphoria. There's nothing. So anyway, that was just a joke. It cost, I think, $1,000, plus you had to buy your scripts. But I did it in 2 weeks. I weaned myself off from Suboxone. And I went the entire summer without touching a drug. I was a miserable fuck. I was back to being who I was before. Just you hurt people. And I just wasn't ready to give up that feeling. So time goes by, a few more months, and I get a job offer from a friend of mine who works for New York State Parks. And there was a position open for a steam fitter. So I applied for it. I was kind of sick of working for myself, and I was worried about, you know, retirement and stuff like that. So 10 years ago, or 11, wow, a lot longer than that. It was 2008, so 12 years ago, I took the job. And within 2 days of being at the job, I met somebody on the crew that took opiates from his doctor. And he asked me if I wanted one because I had a backache one day. And I said, nope, I don't want one. I'm not doing it. And a few days later went by, and I fucking hated this job. I worked really hard at my job, and this was by far a job I just hated it. I'm not going to get into details, but I just could not stand it. So, you know, I said, yeah, I'll take one of those. So I took one. But when I took it, I said, I'm just taking one. I'm never taking another one. And I took it. And there was the feeling I was looking for again. Oh, this job's not so bad. I love it. Oh, this is such a good feeling. Nice and fuzzy. Oh, this feels good. And I said, well, do you have any extras? And he said, oh, I have a ton. My mother's on this. She doesn't take them, and she's got so many at her house. If you want, we can drive there. I said, sure. I said, just give me a few. I'm only going to use them when I need them. So he gave me a huge bottle of Percocet. And, you know, that bottle lasted me like a week, and I got more from him. So at that point, I was out of Percocet. And I had to do something. And this is where my life goes south. I go to a doctor for my back. I had a spinal fusion in 1991, right out of high school. And my back always has bothered me. And this is where my life really goes downhill. My back bothered me then as much as it does now. But between then and now, I put myself through living hell. All from the power of drugs. And everything that I'm about to say is 100% true. I went back to the doctor and told him my back hurt and I couldn't deal with it. So the doctor said, well, we can send you to a pain clinic if you want to try that. And this is long before pain clinics were getting in trouble and there was opiates that were out of control and there was computers that could check where you got what. So I said, sure. So I went to this pain clinic with my x-rays. In walks a doctor. He was an anesthesiologist. He looks at my x-rays and said, wow, your back's messed up. Let's start him out on, what do you weigh? Oh, okay. Let's start him out on 240 milligram Oxycontins a day with 6, 10, 7, 5 Percocets for breakthrough pain. And my eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. I couldn't believe it. I hit the mother load. Off I went with more drugs than I thought I could ever use. Like, I thought, wow, I'll never go through this many drugs. I'm set. Won't have a problem. I'll always have them on hand. Things won't spiral out of control. This is great. That lasted as long as, you know, until my body just wanted more. Because your tolerance builds and builds and builds. This pain clinic happened to be like a Pez dispenser. So I went back. And instead of telling you every time I went back several times saying this didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work. So I went from Oxycontin to, we tried morphine, but morphine wasn't as strong. So back to Oxycontin, then to Dilaudid, and then we went from Dilaudid to fentanyl. And I know fentanyl is the strongest drug there is, but I was on the patches. And the patches were a pain in the ass. The only way to get high from them was to peel them apart and eat the gel. And it was just too much for me. So we went from the fentanyl patches back to OxyContin, but we went on 80 milligram pills twice a day. And one thing I told myself was I was never going to ever snort a pill. So the 80 milligram OxyContins plus the Percocets were doing the job, but not like the first time I ever felt. And that's what we're always chasing. So I went back and they switched me to another drug, and that was the mother load of all drugs. They said, well, let's put you on a drug called Opana. So they started me on the highest strength Opana they could give me, and they gave me that twice a day. And when I took my first Opana, it was the same thing. There was the feeling that I had from day one, the first time I took the first drug ever. Everything felt great. So that buzz, or that high, started to wear off after not too long. And I just was taking drugs every day to function. I knew that I just couldn't get that feeling. But then one night I said, these are time released. I know I can scrape the time release off from the pill. I said, I'm going to do that one time. I'm going to scrape it off and I'm going to snort it. And I literally remember upstairs in my bedroom saying, I'm going to try it one time only. In the bathroom, I went, I scraped it off. I snorted that pill, and it was beyond the first feeling I've ever had in my life. It was a rush so amazing, I can't even explain. So that was the answer. I found it. It couldn't get any better than this. This is where I want to be. So I stayed on those for a long time. But I started losing, you know, trust. And I started going down roads that I shouldn't go down. And things got worse as before they got better. Because I decided to start letting people know that I was on, you know, or had access to opiates. And so these people started letting me in on their little life of their drugs. And when I did that, I got introduced to a whole new world of friends. These were peoples that I thought were friends. Every time I went out, my wife would tell me they were not friends. But they liked the drugs I had. I liked the drugs they sold. And once I got into this little clique of people, I was completely shocked at the amount of people that I started to learn did a lot of cocaine and other drugs. I couldn't believe like who I was meeting, and it was almost like this little secret world. Like, oh, you do this too? Oh, okay. Well, then you can come to this party. Oh, you do that? All right. Well, hey, we're having a party over here. And, you know, you walk into that party and you see people in there that you can't believe it. So here I am thinking, wow, this is what I've been looking for. These are the people that like me. I have friends. So I led myself down this delusional path that made me forget that I was married and I had two kids at home, and I led this little life of just disappearing and not being part of my family for a long time. And it's not because I didn't love them. I loved them very much. I still do. It was just because I was lost. I was stuck. I was in a place that I thought made me happy, and that didn't last long. It eventually turned into a place I wasn't happy. I just knew I had to be there to fulfill my needs. And so there's a lot more to this story, and I think I'll stop here. Coming up, hopefully the next podcast, if not the next podcast, it will be the following. I have the first person that I ever helped get clean. When I found my new calling, when I became a clean person, I just had this tremendous amount of feeling. I can't describe what it is, but it felt so good for me to be able to help other people. And I came across this gentleman, got him clean. He's been 8 years clean. He's doing amazing things. He's getting married. I just reached out to him for the first time in a few years and told him what I was doing. starting these podcasts, and I was hoping that he would be a guest. He's got quite the story, and he has become a dear friend of mine. So I look forward to doing that. And also in the future, I am going to start having a guest, hopefully on as many podcasts as I can, because it makes things so much easier for me. It's very hard to sit here in a room by myself and just speak without notes. So looking forward to the future. And until then, everybody, take care of yourself. And I really appreciate you listening. So long.